You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji.
Good morning, everybody. Certainly for Americans, the attacks on September 11th were extraordinary events. And the extraordinary measures that the Bush administration took in the war on terror to deal with the aftermath of those attacks has become a debate over the question of what the Constitution actually means. It's perhaps one of the most important judicial debates of our time, and certainly the most important of this early century. Joining us to talk about exactly what the extraordinary measures that the Bush administration took to deal with justice and the war on terror is Jane Mayer, a writer for The New Yorker magazine, who wrote a spectacular book, The Dark Side, the inside story of how the war on terror turned into a war on American ideals. Jane, thanks for joining us.
So glad to be with you.
You know, your book reminds me so much of James Mann's book, The Rise of the Vulcans, which is kind of a story of how ideologues descended on the White House and government as part of the sort of neoconservative revolution that the Bush administration ushered in. But what you tell is a much more gripping story of how in the aftermath of September 11th, personalities emerged from inside the administration that were perhaps even more decisive. And explain to me, first of all, what personalities Americans need to know more about in positions that they might never have paid much attention to, but for these events.
Well, in some ways, it's many of the same cast of characters as James Mann wrote about. And I love that book. The Vulcans is a terrific sort of intellectual history of the neocons. But among the people that are important in that book, that are important in this book, or most important is the Vice President Cheney, and then the person that maybe no one knows about, but who has become tremendously important, is Vice President Cheney's legal advisor, David Addington, who's been at his side for the last couple decades. And he's in a position, as you say, that it's very obscure. He was the lawyer to the vice president and is now the chief of staff to the vice president. Who would think that he would be wielding the power he did? But at one point, one of the things that comes through in this book is that there was hidden internal resistance to these extreme policies from inside the White House. A number of people tried to stop it, what almost seemed like a coup. And at one point, one of the lawyers said to me, a Republican lawyer who I can't name, but very conservative Republican lawyer, was sitting there watching Addington and a couple of other of these people who were really holding the reins of the U.S. government, and he said he thought to himself, how did these lunatics ever get control of the United States government? So it was a tiny clique of people with tremendous, almost unchecked power.
And, you know, the details of these policies were slow in the coming. I mean, let's speak about the Extraordinary Rendition Program, many of the details of which you reveal in your book. And also you reveal the process by which reporters variously put together tail wing numbers and shadowy flights in the night that became suddenly this program where people were abducted on very little evidence and ended up being tortured in other nations. Give us one example of the little details that became crucial to the larger picture.
Well, I mean, for me, this has been something that I've been living through. So it's like piecing together a giant jigsaw puzzle, how the story of rendition really got told. And I tried to give readers a sense of, and I think many people have, you know, heard of it by now, or even, you know, there's been a Hollywood movie about it. But as it was happening, It seemed kind of, you couldn't believe that what you were hearing was for real. There would be a tiny little report someplace, like in Pakistan, that in the middle of the night, somebody in the middle of an airport would see a private jet, a Gulfstream jet, land with a crew of men in black hoods who would come off, grab someone, bring them back and throw them on board and then disappear. And the ground crew and everybody else that was connected with this flight was mysterious. And so I would, that little tiny news blip, there was a small story in Pakistan, was picked up by a Washington Post reporter, Rajiv Chandaskarian, and who's now an editor at the Washington Post. He's a terrific reporter. He then wrote a story in the Washington Post trying to find out more about it, and when he made calls, nobody knew who this plane was registered to, and he figured it had to have something to do with spooks, but he couldn't find out any more right then. basically those little tiny pieces of abductions around the world. There was one in Sweden, and there were of course one that we all know about now in Italy, where people would just be snatched off the streets. There'd be tiny stories, and reporters started piecing it together. It was really like a global relay race. People would say, you know, this is all I could get, you know, on to you, and the next country's reporters would try to find out about it. Then eventually there became people obsessed with this, and there would be plane spotters who would go and watch with binoculars looking for
and
this
Jane,
one plane.
It wasn't just on rendition in terms of those details being slow in coming. It's also on the domestic surveillance program, on the Guantanamo detainees, and the military trials. It just seems like at the heart of this is a systematic effort of secrecy.
Oh, it's been completely shrouded in secrecy and in arguments about national security. But I think part of, you know, what aided that is simply that what was going on was so unthinkable that it took a while for people to believe that this could be happening. Because I have an anecdote here where Michael Ratner, who's a very left-wing and activist lawyer who was involved early on in representing some of the Guantanamo people, was hearing reports from his defendants sort of third hand that they were purposefully abused and put through strange treatment. And he told me he didn't believe it at first. He didn't believe it until the Abu Ghraib pictures came out, because no one thought the United States would ever have a policy like this.
And now there's almost a bureaucracy called the dark side, which pushes the envelope on this that the court is continually ruling on. There's so much to talk about on this book. I guess what I'd love to end on is, there are personalities who began as quasi-traitors defending these detainees who have suddenly become constitutional advocates, the lawyers who represented so many of the people at Guantanamo Bay and in the Extraordinary Rendition Program. Describe some of their personalities, if you could.
Well, I think that's a good point. And what I really hope people understand is that the opponents to these policies are not just liberal activists. Inside, some of the strongest arguments have come from the military in particular, which really thinks that this is a dishonorable way to fight a war. And they have codes of conduct that forbid mistreating prisoners. And so, in particular, Alberto Mora, who was the top lawyer for the Navy, when he learned about what was going on in Guantanamo, he tried to stop it internally, and he fights an amazing fight, and he's so eloquent about what he believes the Constitution means.
Wow, and that's just one personality of an enormous number. You know, a lot of books talk about telling the inside story. I really think you did it here, Jane. Thank you so much for joining us.
Great to be with you. Thanks.
Jane Mayer, writer for The New Yorker magazine, author of The Dark Side, The Inside Story of How the War on Terror Turned into a War on American Ideals. Great book, Dara.
I'm going to read that book.
It's terrific.